sentence. "Of course," Mama concurred. "Joanna," Dr. Connor spoke again, "I agree with Charlotte. No disrespect, Pastor, but Gray needs serious help. Medical help." Mama answered, "If I'm not mistaken, the agreement with the county prosecutor requires her to attend Alcoholics Anonymous meetings in South Carolina. She'll have to sign in and everything. Maybe a church-based organization would be helpful to... AA is a wonderful program, but that's not the sort of medical help I'm talking about." Dr. Connor sighed. "She needs to see someone who can work with her regularly. Someone who can dive deep emotionally and prescribe medication."
"A psychiatrist," Charlotte said.
"Yes, Gray needs to see a psychiatrist," Dr. Connor replied. A brief silence passed through the room before the doctor continued. "None of this comes as a surprise to me, Joanna. The substance abuse, the risk-taking behavior." Still crouching on the stair landing, my heart fluttered. How the hell would Dr. Connor be surprised by none of this? I hadn't seen her in years. How could she have any idea what I was going through?
"Marianne, I understand your concern, believe me, but..."
Mama paused.
"Would you all excuse us for a moment?"
"Of course,"
Pastor Calcutt answered. The floorboards creaked as Mama and Dr. Connor exited into the foyer. I shrank further back on the landing and froze as the creaky parlor door slid closed. A cabal within a cabal. Typical Mama. Dr. Connor picked up where the conversation had been left, straining to whisper.
"I haven't slept, Joanna. Not from the moment I heard what happened to Mr. Godfrey. And now the car accident? How do you think I feel, Mary Ann? She's my child."
"I regret everything I did," Dr. Connor said.
"Everything I didn't do."
My heart beat in erratic fits and starts. Eavesdropping on this conversation would pair nicely with wine. Glasses and glasses of wine.
"What's done is done," Mama said, seeming to reassure herself as much as the doctor. "Believe me, regrets are about all I have left."
"Then fix it, Joanna," Dr. Connor implored. "Make it right. Get Gray to a doctor, one who specializes in these sorts of things. The lying? It was out of control back then, and I'm afraid to ask if she's kept it up. From the news report, I'm worried..."
"Don't you dare go down that path. Gray has had problems, but they have nothing to do with this. Besides, what good will it do now, so many years later? It'll dredge up pain and heartbreak, and it won't get anybody any closer to finding Paul. Wherever the hell he's gone off to. I swear I'm starting to hate that man. I don't use that word often, but I truly hate him. Putting Gray through all this, pushing her to a breaking point, he'd be better off dead."
"Paul dead?"
As Mama spoke, I ground my back teeth and picked at my scabbed nail bed. "My husband is fucking missing, and she's telling people she wished he was dead?" Dr. Connor hesitated, then said,
"Regardless of the circumstances now, Gray needs a specialist. I almost..."
"You almost what?"
"I could go to her myself, Joanna. Confront her again about the lies."
"You wouldn't."
More shuffling. Mama must be stepping closer to Dr. Connor.
"It could destroy her at a time like this."
"It could jar her into getting help. Maybe even save her. I don't know why I let you talk me into sitting on this all those years ago."
I struggled to remain still. My legs turned numb, and my heart pounded strong enough to shatter my rib cage. Mama grew indignant.
"Do you hear yourself, Mary Ann? Years ago, decades in fact, the situation was delicate back then. Seamus was running for president, and discretion was the only way."
Dr. Connor scoffed.
A lot of good discretion did for Seamus. Regardless, it's too late now. You've been compensated for your troubles. Mama's voice quaked. We've all got regrets. We've all made difficult decisions, but circumstances called for them. What's important now is getting Gray better. And I don't believe for a second that digging up skeletons is going to help my daughter one bit. Dr. Connor exhaled loudly. Maybe you're correct, but now you've got a chance to make things better moving forward. None of this reformed disciples bullshit. Get her into a psychiatrist's office, under whatever pretenses you have to. Mama's silence suggested careful thinking. Okay, Marianne, you're right. I'll need a day or two to come up with a reason. You think she'll be okay till then? You know I can't answer that question, Joanna. I'm an internist. I don't have the training. My trembling ceased. If they were speaking about a psychiatrist specializing in addiction, I'd given them more than enough reason to see one. Was something else being considered here? The heels of both women clacked against the pine as they made for the kitchen. And what had Mama meant by saying Dr. Connor had been compensated? Here I was, hiding on the stairs like a child, listening to other people bicker over me as though I was a child, too. Sure, I had problems, deep problems, but I could take control. In the hospital, they'd recommended a psychiatrist, but Mama hadn't made an appointment for me. Still, I didn't need Mama's permission to see one, and after the accident, I had nothing left to hide. Drinking was no longer a poorly kept secret, but an open wound. The discretion that had kept me from help in the past had vanished. All I needed was a referral from a willing primary care doctor. One like Marianne Connor. Breathing deep, I opened the door to the yellow room, scanning it for my phone. I spotted it on the dresser, likely placed there by Charlotte when we returned to the house. She'd been holding on to it for me. I pressed the home button, and the screen lit up. There was a notification. An email, to be exact. From Annie@shadowmail.com.
29. Nina. I rang Andrew up the morning after we'd had drinks, asking to meet again. He flew out today, and I still had questions. He suggested the Highway Waffle House across from his hotel. A Waffle House. His last day in Elizabeth, and he wanted to wring every last drop of Dixie from this experience on his way out. Like the night before, I made sure to beat him there. By the time he arrived, I was pushing what was left of my hash browns around my plate with a fork, smeared ketchup like blood spatter. Good morning, Andrew said as he made his way to my corner booth. He tapped a server on the shoulder on his way, ordered a coffee. His smile still came off too wide. Hello. I checked my phone once more before returning it to my pocket. A text from the hospice nurse I'd requested for Auntie, confirming she was fine, at least as fine as circumstances allowed. And a couple from Sammy indicating the divers had arrived on the crime scene. I'd have to lie to Sammy when he asked how I learned about Paul and Charlotte's affair. I didn't believe that Andrew had the information above board, but there was no reason to pull Sammy into a gray area. Heading back already then? I asked Andrew as he sat down. Cup of Joe at your request, then it's off to the airport. Right, I smirked. Paul's damaged goods. Your job is done. Correct. Tell me something. A thought had gnawed at me since my last encounter with Andrew, and if I wanted an answer, it was now or never. Why tell me what you found? You already knew Paul's shot at Congress was done after what your team found on his computer, and you obviously had a flight home booked before last night. He paused for a moment, sipping coffee from the chipped brown mug that was placed before him. Honestly? Honestly, We made eye contact.
Because I respect you, Nina.
Bullshit.
It's true. Completely true.
The look on his face said he meant it. He held out his right hand and began to count fingers.
Look, in any small town, there are three centers of power. Local money, local politics, and local police. Money? That's the king's. Politics? Well, that's the king's again. But the police? You're young, you're black, you're a woman, and you're the police.
Four, I corrected. Four centers of power. You forgot local religion. Blessed Lamb Baptist conjured itself inside my head.
Fine, but in a town like this, he cocked his head, you're some kind of woman. And if that's not worth a great deal of respect, I don't know what is.
He stood, draining his coffee in three large gulps and placing his mug on the tabletop. Then humor me one last time.
How so?
He asked, his forehead creasing. I edged forward in my seat. Aside from a few details, you know mostly what I know about Paul's case.
That might be true.
From his incredulous expression, I wondered if he knew more, if he knew about Annie. Pushing the thought aside, I went on. As a former agent, what would your next move be? You'd go after the sister, but how? He glanced toward the window for a moment, to the silvered sky, swollen with rain. When he looked back, he spoke matter-of-factly.
I'd lie.
I grinned sideways. Go on. He brushed his lapel with his palm, leaned in over the table, and lowered his voice to a near whisper.
You need to get all the phones in that house wiretapped. Track emails, cell phones, the works. There's a great deal of pressure on every member of that family. Conversations are bound to happen.
I scoffed. Joanna would never allow it. The lies about the affair might justify a warrant, but that family would circle the wagons like you've never seen. He matched my smirk.
That's why you lie. You tell them the investigation is now focused on kidnapping. Tracing the ransom call is still the easiest way to catch a kidnapper.
They might consent to the phone wiretapping then, I agreed. Might.
Come up with a cover story so they'll buy the delay, he mused. Then you
play them off each other. See what the wiretaps catch. He hesitated, then said,
except you're in a time crunch.
The blood found on the scene. It's a race against the body divers. If Paul's recovered, the kidnapping ruse is shot. Andrew stood once more and tossed a crisp 20 onto the table.
I'd wish you luck, Nina, but I don't think you need any.
Before turning around, he added,
have a nice day, detective.
With that, Andrew was gone. For a moment, I thought a tiny part of me might miss that smile. Then the moment passed. I laid my head back against the torn leather cushion, staring at the mildewed ceiling. I recounted the revelations over the past 24 hours. Paul's rain-diluted blood in the marsh meant he might be dead. Politician Paul, who'd been engaged in an affair with his wife's sister, his wife who nearly drank herself to death, possibly as a result of being sexually assaulted by her cousin. Oh, who also happened to be a venerable defense attorney. Then there was Annie. Annie, whose real name may be Charlotte. My initial instincts might have been right all along. Annie was Paul's mistress, and the calls were meant to torture Gray. Annie had always struck me as a pseudonym. And according to Andrew's findings, Charlotte had a knack for making up names. Florencia. But what would Charlotte's motive be? There were two possibilities. The first had to do with Paul's congressional run. Someone as unstable as Gray would be an immense political liability, more so than debts, perhaps. Could he and Charlotte have concocted this scheme in an elaborate attempt to push Gray off the edge? It sounded crazy, but if so, they'd nearly succeeded yesterday. If Gray had died in the wreck, what might have happened? Paul could have suddenly surfaced, rich from his wife's inheritance. He might even have public sympathy on his side. Certainly he'd have publicity, and that'd be more valuable than support from Cooper and Waters at the ballot box. In fact, were Gray to die, nearly all Paul's problems would vanish. Charlotte's hands would be clean, too. After all, a woman named Annie had tormented Gray, not her. But the second possibility cast an even darker shadow over Gray's sister. A jealous fight by the highway turned ugly. Perhaps Charlotte murdered Paul. We had her DNA in the lab if we found anything at the scene. But why antagonize Gray? I recalled our coffee shop conversation. She'd looked me in my eyes and lied to me about her divorce, about Paul. Was she also lying about how much she cared for Gray? And she was more than a good liar. She was almost flawless. Was she good enough to play the part of Annie? Drowning in motives and opportunities, I reminded myself the simplest answer was usually the right one. But there was nothing simple about any of this. Did Auntie Tilda know something that could help me? Was there a connection to Joanna's checks? As I thought of Auntie's relationship to the King girls, my head swirled. Tapping all the communications coming in and out of Piper Point would be like kicking over a rotten log. There was no telling what unsavory things might slither out. And that was if the family even bought the kidnapping angle and allowed me to do it. Back at the station, Burton summoned me to his corner office before I could flag Sammy down. The 8 mounted deer heads turned the paneled space into a redneck natural history museum. Counting Burton's glower, 9 pairs of eyes bore down on me.
"Jacob Wilcox," Burton started, pausing dramatically between the first and last name.
"Admitted to assaulting our missing person."
"Wasn't on the goddamn highway."
I shifted in my seat. Regardless of his point, the dressing down felt obstructive. "Sheriff?"
"You are walking the line, Nina," he said,
placing both elbows on his heavy desk and clasping his hands together.
"Walking a fine line."
I sat back. Let him talk. Let him get it all out.
"One more."
He pointed his index finger to the ceiling.
"One more fuck up, and you're off this."
I hesitated, met his eyes, said, "Yes, sir."
"This is Paul Godfrey we're talking about, detective. Not some Dixie Outfitters trash picking fights down at Ruby's. A fucking politician, the Kang family."
"I understand."
"You aren't right for this case. Not with that aunt of yours."
My cheeks flushed. "That's not a fair statement."
"I want to be wrong, but you're making my position easier every damn second. I've got the paperwork filled out to bench you. All I have to do is pull the trigger."
I opened my mouth to reply, but he excused me with a patronizing flick of his wrist. As his office door closed behind me, I puffed my cheeks. The love dub of my heartbeat made thinking hard, but I pushed the confrontation aside. No time to dwell on what he'd say about my next plan. 10 minutes later, Sammy sat across from me in the conference room, stretching a rubber band with both thumbs, shirt wrinkled, almost as dubious as Burton had been, only for different reasons.
"How'd you know, Nina?"
"A hunch," I replied, avoiding his eyes. You had a hunch that Paul Godfrey and Charlotte Barfield were engaged in an affair? Bullshit. He leaned forward, fingers steepled on the tabletop. You expect me to believe that a hunch had me cross-referencing business trips on Paul's calendar with purchases on his Navy Union card, the one Gray knows nothing about, mind you, to determine which trips he'd lied about? I looked up from the table. Yeah. You know, I might have believed you if your hunch hadn't been so damn spot on. I sprang up from my chair. There's something there, then? Something that links the two of them? My pulse raced. He slid a manila folder across the table, and I slapped it open. He flicked his chin. I found 38 instances of travel in Paul's schedule this past year. During most of those trips, absolutely zero purchases were made with the Navy Union card, which makes sense. Paul had a Cooper and Waters expense account for every sanctioned trip. I arched my brow. Except? Sammy held up his fingers. Except five. Five trips were recorded as business travel on his calendar, even though his Navy Union card was used. Interestingly, the destinations are all Canadian cities. Vancouver, Calgary, Montreal. You get the idea. I cracked a grin. Paul had a system to keep things straight for himself. Sure looks like it, because each time Paul's calendar indicated he took a trip to a city in Canada, his Navy Union card was used for purchases in the Raleigh-Durham area. I thumbed through Sammy's notes in the manila folder. When was the most recent trip? A couple months back, listed as Toronto. The purchases don't appear to have been suspicious themselves, so we haven't flagged them for further investigation. Groceries, restaurants, gasoline, that sort of thing. But we've got a link. We can put him in Raleigh. Sammy tried to temper my excitement. You think Charlotte's good for this, then? Paul's disappearance, Annie, everything? Best break we've had yet. Besides the blood, Sammy shrugged. I stood up from my seat, uncapping a dry erase marker. I paced to one of the glass walls and began to write. Correct, which brings me to my next point. As I wrote, Sammy's eyes burned into the back of my neck, but even he couldn't argue with results. Not results like these. The marker squeaked across glass, and I took a step back. Our next move, I announced. Behind me, in large red letters, kidnapping hypothesis. Sammy narrowed his eyes. A kidnapping with no ransom demand this late in the game? Not impossible, but sure as hell unlikely. That's right, I grinned, which means we have our work cut out for us if we're going to make the Kings believe it. Sammy shook his head. You think lying to the family is the best course of action at this point? I clasped my hands together in a fist and exhaled. I've made a mistake. I moved too slowly on this from the start. I take responsibility for that. Another head shake from Sammy. Making another mistake won't fix that. We need to make up for lost time. Wiretaps are the quickest way to do that. Joanna King deals in half-truths and lies, and now we've learned Charlotte does, too. Go with me on this one, Sammy. If it doesn't work out, then it's on me, not you. I give you my word on that. Sammy grew quiet as he considered my argument, then spoke. Your word, given the course of this investigation, the delays, your family history. He hesitated once more. I hope your word is as good as it used to be. The sentiment hurt, coming from Sammy. It hurt because it was true. Enormous raindrops struck my windshield, and my thoughts went to the body divers that were no doubt scouring the marsh beds as I drove home to Auntie Tilda's. The weather and water chop might prove an obstacle, but nothing was insurmountable. If there was a body to find, they'd find it. And I needed them to find Paul. A homicide case built without a body was hollow, but not too quickly. It was an ironic position to be in as an investigator. Doubts aside, Sammy gave my plan the buy-in I needed. After we'd sketched out a false timeline to follow, we'd settled on how we would switch the focus to kidnapping and determined precisely what information we wanted access to. We would hold off on confronting Charlotte until after the monitors were secured in the home. Importantly, our rationale needed to be airtight, both for the Kings and Sheriff Burton. Even if we got Joanna's signed consent to listen in, I wanted deniability regarding wiretapping under false pretenses. That's where Annie and her calls fit perfectly. So much work to be done, but at least we were finally getting somewhere. My turn signal clicked as I hung a left into Auntie's driveway. James from next door waved at me with a garden-gloved hand as he weeded his flower beds beneath an umbrella. What an odd man. Exiting my car, I nodded hello and ran to avoid getting wet. My keys stuck more than once in the front door. Inside, a sermon played on the TV, which meant Auntie was having a good day, good enough to get up from bed on her own. The refrigerator door rattled from inside the kitchen. Was she feeling well enough to eat something, too? Auntie greeted me as I sat my bag and keys on the kitchen table. She offered a small grin and turned back to the open refrigerator. I snatched a dish towel off the wall rack and wiped the rain from my face. Can I get you something, Auntie? Fix you something to eat? Oh, no, she protested. I can do it myself. I woke up this morning thinking of fried eggs. I might not be able to eat a whole one, but I couldn't get the thought out of my head. As she fumbled with the egg basket, I reached into the cupboard for the skillet. She shouldn't be doing anything by herself, but I had no intention of taking this away from her. The next time she crawled into that hospice bed might be her last. Gnarled hands trembling, she cracked an egg into a bowl and shuffled to the stove. I'd already melted a slice of butter in the pan. I'll take care of it, she told me. Go on and take a seat. You want one too? I couldn't help smiling. No, Auntie, I'm not hungry. As the egg sizzled, a thought I'd been carrying around for 2 days grew louder. I had to question Auntie Tilda about Gray's allegations. I needed the corroboration, of course, but the decades of severance checks got me thinking. Were they connected in some way? For all the reasons Auntie might take severance money from Joanna, only one possibility came up over and over again. Did Auntie know about the abuse? Were the checks really hush money? My stomach tightened. Was Auntie the kind of person who'd actually take it? She slid the fried egg onto a plate and hobbled to the table. Today was a good day for her, the best she's had in quite some time. There may not be another chance to ask her. But as she took a seat across the table, I decided to let her finish her food first. She'd woken up thinking of fried eggs, after all. Golden yolk oozed out as her fork sank into the egg. She'd fried it to perfection, in spite of the cancer choking her organs. After a few bites, Auntie rested her fork next to the half-eaten egg on her plate. Do you mind helping me up? She asked. Before she finished her question, I'd already slid out of my chair to give her a hand. One foot in front of the other, we made our way to the bedroom together. It occurred to me that this might be the last moment I had with a faultless Auntie Tilda. Tilda who'd never take money for a cover-up. For everything she was, everything she'd done, I'd put her atop a pedestal. If she came off it, I'd grieve the loss. Pulling her knitted quilt over her chest, I swallowed a hard lump in my throat and took a seat on the bed beside her. Auntie, I need to ask you something. Something very important. What is it? She asked, closing her eyes. The simple act of making an egg had drained her. I need you to tell the truth. I need you to tell me the God's honest truth. I gave her a moment to respond, but she stayed silent. Something told me she knew what I was going to ask. My involvement with the Kings had been all over local news and radio. Maybe the brief pause permitted her to gather herself. As the moment stretched, my heart fluttered. Fearless Auntie Tilda may not be as fearless as I'd believed. I took another deep breath. Does Joanna King write you checks for your silence? Still no words from Auntie. She rustled uncomfortably beneath the sheets. Maybe if the question was more specific, she'd answer. Hearing the allegation might startle her into telling me. I didn't want the checks to have anything to do with this, but I needed to rule it out with facts. Pulse racing, I asked again. Did Gray's cousin once touch her inappropriately? Did Joanna want you to keep quiet about it? On account of Seamus's run for office, maybe? Auntie breathed a staggered sigh and opened her eyes. They glistened wetly. No, Nina. I dug my nails into my palms. Why did I have to do this? Why did I have to push her? I spoke forcefully. I need you to be honest with me. I held my breath as Auntie looked into my eyes, regret welling in hers. That boy didn't just touch her once. She choked up as she spoke, trembling. It happened so many times. Something uncomfortable stirred inside me. Questions searching for answers bubbled to the surface like bits of leafy matter in marsh water. How do you know? She drew a long, pained breath. I had my suspicions. The way that boy's eyes lingered on her. The way her drawers weren't flush in her dresser after he'd been over. Their contents not the way I'd folded and tucked them. But I had no proof. I followed him around that house as best I could, but I couldn't be everywhere. I winced, biting my lip as she continued speaking. More than once, Auntie paused, as if to gather strength for her next words. I walked in on them alone in a room, and I knew. I just knew. I tried to tell Seamus and Joanna. They wouldn't hear any of it. A prickly knot grew in the back of my throat. What sort of parents cover up abuse of their own child? It was all about that damned election. I've never seen such willfully ignorant people. Matthew's daddy was the campaign lawyer, if I recall right. Between that and being family, they wouldn't hear it. What changed? When Gray spoke up herself, she told her mama what happened, and even a woman as cold as that one is couldn't deny it any longer. Mrs. King was keen to have Gray seen by the family doctor, wanted to make sure that boy hadn't given her little hummingbird any venereal diseases. I was glad to learn Joanna had a soul, because you best believe I seriously doubted it. And Seamus? Mr. King was mad as hell. He even threatened Matthew's life if he ever showed his face again at Piper Point. But what was done. He didn't think it made sense to drag the whole family down. Taking a deep staccato breath, she continued. The checks are to keep my mouth shut, but not for the abuse itself.
I agreed to sign my own name to the paperwork so there'd be no record of having a child tested. It was the only way to get that girl some care. Doctor took samples right there in Joanna's bathroom. HIV, syphilis, all of it. Tubes of drawn blood, urine, all bearing my name. That's when it dawned on me. You stuck a tape recorder in her pocket all those years ago. That's why you knocked over a drunk Seamus King's dinner tray. I had to get the truth out in some way, she said. If not the actual truth, then I could at least let the world know what sort of folks the Kings were. I waited till the South Carolina primaries to do it, Nina. I waited till it would do the most damage. It didn't make up for what she'd done, but I understood why she'd been complicit. She did care for Gray. She'd wanted her tested, and she'd wanted the Kings to suffer for how they handled it. Who was the family doctor? Who forged the STI tests for Joanna?
Dr. Connor, Auntie replied. Mary Ann Connor, a selfish woman whose medical oaths aren't worth the paper they're written on.
Can I get you to make a statement, declaring what you've just told me?
You write up what I told you, and I'll put my name to it, she answered.
Her eyelids sagged. I had to move quickly.
I don't have a thing to lose by telling the truth now.
As I made for Auntie's desk for a pen, Auntie cleared her throat again.
The doctor wasn't the only call Joanna made that night, not even the first one.
I paused. Who else did she call?
The police.
So Joanna called the police on Matthew? A cough from Auntie.
She tried. Sheriff came to the house, but Seamus convinced him to put it away. Told him it was handled, and things were best left alone.
I braced, asked, which sheriff?
Deputy sheriff, Auntie replied. Funny what details you cling to after all the years. I'll never forget how the man looked me up and down as he introduced himself.
What was his name? I whispered.
Your boss, Nina. Deputy Sheriff Jim Burton.
30. Gray. I'm terribly sorry to hear about your mishap, Hummingbird. Please know you're in my prayers. So is Paul. When we lose loved ones, and it does seem likely that Paul's been lost, it's often helpful to gather all the photographs we have. To misplace any memories would only add unnecessarily to grief. As such, I've included some pictures of Paul that were in my possession from the happy times we spent together. Warmest regards, Annie. She'd slept with Paul? Annie was Paul's sociopathic lover. The first picture put me on my knees in front of the toilet, my broken shoulder throbbing as I steadied myself against the porcelain rim. Later, I lay on my back atop a made-up bed in the yellow room, frozen from head to toe. I couldn't unsee them, the glimpses of Paul's affair attached to Annie's email. Thoughts of separation and divorce surfaced before vanishing again beneath the filthy images, so many of them. Things even the darkest corners of my mind could never create. And calling me Hummingbird? That meant that beyond the affair, the bizarre fetishes, they'd spoken about me intimately. Mocked me. Invisible spiders danced up and down my limbs, needle legs prickling my skin, tickling in between my toes, behind my ears. I imagined turning up a bottle of dry red. The slippery glass mouth on my own, the glugging sound, swallowing gulp after gulp till the green bottom appeared and these fucking spiders fell off me. I was wrong about Annie, so wrong. She never wanted to help me or Paul. She didn't get lost on the way to Cirillo's. She intended to stand me up, taunted me because of my husband. Sour acid climbed up from my stomach. I didn't want to vomit again. My heart stopped as I considered a new possibility. The facts flashed across my mind in rapid succession as I dug my nails into my arms. And it does seem likely that Paul's been lost. She was right. The goddamn bitch was right. Annie hadn't reached out to me until after Paul vanished. She knew about the accident, too. Even if she stood me up, that still meant she was in Elizabeth. She'd at least been down Oleander Avenue. Paul could very well be dead. Murdered in cold blood that night off the highway while I'd been slouched over in the passenger seat, passed out from drinking. Annie might have killed him. But if that was true, why hadn't she killed me at the same time? Unless this is what she wants, to torture me. Killing me would have been too easy. It would have spared me from all of this. I shut my eyes tight, placing myself back in the bar. Back in Ruby's Pub on Christmas Eve. I'd just finished my first drink, my mind focused on getting another with laser-like intensity. I searched my memory of the crowd for a woman's face, one that stood out from everyone else's. Even if I didn't recognize Annie, there must have been something off about her. Someone who'd do something malicious to Paul and still come after me? She must hate me. Could she have concealed her loathing if I'd walked by? But I'd avoided looking at other patrons as I made my way to the counter. I hadn't wanted to catch a glance from a familiar person and delay my next drink. Damn it, Gray! Frantic and quaking, I leapt up and reached for my phone. A confluence of anger and fear had my hands trembling and sweating. Wet fingers smeared and smudged the screen of my cell. Scrolling through my contacts, I finally landed on Nina Palmer's mobile. She needed to know about this. All of this. The email, the pictures, everything. No more keeping secrets from her. I learned that lesson, and my arm rested in a sling to prove it. There must be some way to trace the email or the photos. Something the police could do. Some way Nina could help me. The sooner we found Annie, the sooner we'd find Paul. Or at least find out what had happened to him. The not knowing was eating away at me. The not knowing might kill me.
31. Nina. Any doubt that Charlotte was Annie disappeared as soon as I opened the images Gray forwarded from her phone. Let me weigh our options, and I'll call you back this afternoon. I told Gray as I hung up. She'd been desperate for answers. I didn't blame her. Annie possessed intimate knowledge of Gray and had obviously been sleeping with Paul. Only one woman checked both boxes. God damn, Sammy cringed as he flipped through the photos at my desk. That's some shit if I've ever seen it, and I've seen a lot. Ain't it, though? The hate isn't what unnerves me most. It's the charade. The way Charlotte acts as though she's Gray's only true ally in all this, he replied, handing my phone back. No kidding, I said, plugging it into my desk charger. I hesitated, then added, I feel for Gray. It's a wonder she's held it together this long. Matthew, Paul, and now Annie tormenting her? Possibly her own sister. He nodded. If anyone deserved a drink, it'd be her. I still can't wrap my head around Matthew. No statute of limitations, but it'd be a hell of a case to build from here. I bit my bottom lip. Short of a confession, no. It's all hearsay. He said, she said. Your aunt said, too. Her statements are a starting place, but we need more than that. We need witnesses. Corroboration on the STI test samples, additional victims if they exist.
Speaking of, he replied, you gonna clue Gray in on her sister?
When I figure out how to broach it. She's pretty broken up at this point.
Are you worried about how she might take it? How Charlotte might respond to her if confronted?
Shaking my head, I changed the topic. To tell you the truth, talking with Auntie Tilda's been the only thing on my mind. Tough to game through anything else. It was a whopper of a revelation. And not the only one. Joanna had brought the police to Piper Point before Seamus intervened. Whether money exchanged hands a la Auntie, or it was a wink and a smile on Burton's part, the fact remained. Burton had heard these allegations before and done nothing. Now he was turning the screws on my handling of Paul's case. Sammy shoved his hands in his pockets.
If Matthew was a pedophile back then, he likely hasn't changed. We might have a predator loose in Elizabeth.
Not just a predator, I corrected him. A defense attorney. A privileged predator.
Should we pursue it? Sammy asked.
I think so. These aren't two entirely separate investigations. Charlotte was left unsupervised with Matthew, the same as her sister, and that warrants an inquiry. My desk phone rang. I knew why before I answered. Joanna King had arrived at my invitation. I puffed my cheeks and stood. Time to convince a woman with a pathologic aversion to disclosure to let me tap her phone lines. For the second time in a week, Joanna sat at the conference room table. The look on her face, a barely concealed scowl, said she was none too pleased about it. Good afternoon, Joanna. Her floral perfume enveloped me, this time peony and entitlement. Detective, she answered tersely. You got any air in this building? I'm about to burn up alive in here. She removed her blazer and rolled up the sleeves of her silk blouse. I'll see what I can do about the temperature in a moment. Crossing her legs beneath the table, she muttered, my tax dollars hard at work. Disregarding the slight, I continued, I've asked you to come in today because we've had a break in the case. A lie, sort of. The scowl dissolved into a look of surprise.
Really? What sort of break? Shouldn't Gray be here to hear this too?
This is a sensitive matter, and until we can be certain, the information is only to be distributed on a need-to-know basis.
What could be so sensitive? She asked, arching her brow.
I'd piqued her interest. A good start, since appealing to the woman's sense of intrigue might be my only chance. Annie, I said.
What about her?
I folded my hands together atop the table. We have reason to believe Paul's being held against his will, and she's an accomplice. Mama shifted in her seat.
Held against his will? Like kidnapping? That's preposterous. If Paul had been kidnapped, wouldn't there have been a ransom call or something? We've heard nothing from anyone.
That's incorrect, Joanna. We have heard from someone. We've heard from Annie. Joanna rolled her eyes.
Barely. The woman leaves nonsensical voicemails and doesn't show up to meetings she's arranged. That hardly qualifies as a ransom demand.
Did she know about the photographs on Gray's phone? Perhaps Gray had hidden them from her out of shame. I kept my voice steady. To the contrary, we believe those instances were botched attempts at delivering a ransom demand. As I said, we only believe Annie to be an accomplice, not the actual kidnapper. She cocked her head to one side, eyes narrowed.
Then who the hell's the kidnapper?
And how have you learned all this?
We've been coordinating with Security Solutions, the private security firm, I answered. They've been working the case in Washington. The abduction occurred in Elizabeth, but we believe it was planned in D.C. This appeared to take Joanna by surprise.
I know who Security Solutions is, but why haven't I heard any of this? Don't they work for me?
Technically, they don't work for you, I said. They work for Paul's firm, Cooper and Waters.
Well, what have they learned?
Joanna sounded desperate now, starving for information. So hungry for it, she'd agreed to wiretapping for no other reason than to satisfy her own morbid curiosity. Paul's fallen into debt with some very bad people. I tossed carefully selected bank statements from the Navy Union account across the table. I wanted Joanna to see a lot of red numbers. We believe the kidnapping is an attempt to extort funds from the family, to get their money back. I know it's a simple answer, but simple is usually correct. She thumbed through the statements, clearly fighting to maintain her composure. My heart beat faster. As such, we need to monitor all communications at the house. When Annie calls again, we need to be ready to trace the call. Joanna knotted her brow.
Monitor all communications? Like our telephones?
Telephones, internet, all of it. For a brief moment, the woman sat speechless, fidgeting with the knot of pearls suspended from her neck.
This still doesn't make any sense. Paul's been gone for days now without any word. Where would they be keeping him? Do you think he's been harmed?
I shook my head. I can't say for certain. But I do know the longer these things go on, the slimmer the chances become of recovering the victim. That's why it's critical to get the monitors in place now. She reached into her purse and retrieved a pack of cigarettes. She made eye contact in lieu of asking permission to smoke inside a police station. She'd never asked me for permission to do anything. I nodded, and her silver lighter sparked a tiny flame at its tip. Finishing a long drag, she spoke up.
I don't know how Gray is going to react to all this. She's very fragile right now.
She can't know, I replied, before emphasizing, and neither can Charlotte.
Why on earth not?
She ashed into a cup of coffee she'd brought with her. A wispy blossom of cigarette smoke lingered between us. The true answer to Joanna's question was twofold. Most importantly, Charlotte needed to remain in the dark or the recordings would be useless. She'd already proven to possess impressive acting skills. But also, leaving Joanna with a sense of control by being the only one at Piper Point with knowledge of the tapped lines was the key to getting her consent. We need Gray and her sister to act naturally if and when the ransom demand comes through. The kidnappers must not suspect they're being recorded or that we can trace their location. Joanna's cigarette hissed as she dropped it into her coffee cup.
Isn't it illegal to record people without their knowledge?
We only need one party's consent, I answered. And the phones, the internet service, it's all in your name anyways. Your house, your name. Recrossing her legs, she appeared to think for a moment.
If Paul's been kidnapped, it stands to reason Annie will make contact again.
She's obviously not a professional. Perhaps monitoring communications will be the best way to catch her, and whoever she works for. She slipped a second cigarette out from her pack. Paul has plenty of political enemies. And then, of course, there's the family money, like you said. I breathed a heavy sigh and produced the consent forms from my folder. I've marked each place needing a signature.
Seems like an awful lot, she complained as she flipped through the papers.
She hesitated and glanced up. Her next question caught me completely off guard, a jarring reminder that when it came to Joanna King, I'd never be the only one playing games.
These monitors, will I be able to use them, even after the investigation?
32. Annie. The marshes smell like soggy, salty mud, like shit. You can't see them on account of it being nearly midnight, but the lapping water sloshes like the words of a drunk, like Gray when she speaks. I make my way across the crabgrass, passing through swirling clouds of buzzing gnats. Dew gathers on the ground, and tiny droplets tickle the in-betweens of my toes. A singing cricket grows quieter and quieter as I creep closer to its hidden nook. Then, silence. I turn back towards the house, a sprawling, darkened shadow, but for the light in Gray's room. I was raised not to play with my food, not to toy with it, but I can't help myself. Besides, I'm not playing. Not at all. An unexpected rustling in the courtyard. Training my eyes on the hedges, blackened by the night, I find the movement's source. A black and white cat, deftly moving my way. I stand perfectly still, let her steal her way close to me. Feline caution gives her pause, but I came prepared. Reaching into my pocket, I grab a handful of dried kibble and scatter it onto the cold bricks before my naked feet. The aging cat hesitates, a scrupulous old girl, then sniffs and starts to nibble. I stretch my fingers and stroke her back. People aren't so different from animals. They can be distracted. They can be manipulated. That's a good girl, I whisper. I run my hand up Hattie's spine to the nape of her fragile neck. I reach into my other pocket, the pocket holding my paring knife. You wouldn't let me get so close to you back then, would you, old girl? You could sense something was wrong. Not so smart anymore. Are you Hattie the Catty? I tighten my grip and brace for the struggle. 33. Gray. I sat at the kitchen table with Charlotte and Mama, 3 cups of morning coffee and 3 unfinished pieces of toast between us. I guess they'd lost their appetites, too. AA's going to be a new start for you, Charlotte said. When's your first meeting?
Noon tomorrow, I answered, tightening the strap on my shoulder sling. A dull pain radiated down my arm.
As great as it sounded, a new start seemed impossible. AA might show me the right direction, but did I have the strength? Just don't drink, I'd repeated to myself. Drinking is an active behavior. I've got to find one, and pour one, and bring it to my lips. Just don't do any of those things. But in the wake of Paul's affair, what the hell else was I supposed to do? In his selfishness, he'd disappeared before I found out, so there'd be no way to parse the differences between cheating and vanishing and Annie. All while I was supposed to remain fucking sober? He's gaslighting me from God knows where. Charlotte scattered my thoughts.
Do you think you'll stay here for a while longer, then? Maybe I could help you find groups in D.C.
I can't go home anytime soon. I shook my head. If I was left alone at our house, I'd drink myself dead. Horrible as it seemed, staying at Piper Point was safer for me. Besides, Nina wouldn't let me, even if I wanted. Not with everything happening.
Speaking of, the police are coming over for a bit today, Mama announced, bringing her porcelain mug to her lips. Detective Palmer, too.
Why are they coming? Charlotte asked, wide-eyed. Mama returned her cup to the table.
They've got more questions for the family.
Charlotte pressed.
What sort of questions? Have they learned anything new?
To be perfectly honest, I'm not sure, Mama answered. I only know they have questions. It's normal. Her eyes met mine. All things considered. Charlotte might be surprised by the visit, and Mama disinterested, but I knew exactly what questions Nina wanted answered. The pictures from my phone, I said aloud. What pictures? Now Mama seemed surprised by me. Gray, don't. Charlotte grabbed my hand on the table. I'd shown them to Nina and Charlotte, but not Mama. They were too mortifying. When Paul returned, if Paul returned, I'd wanted to maintain his dignity, especially in Mama's eyes. But there was no sense keeping them secret now. She'd learn about them as soon as the police arrived anyways. Besides, what did I care about Paul's dignity? He hadn't given two shits about mine when he'd let Annie do those things to him. While he'd mocked me and made fun of me and told Annie all about how Mama called me Hummingbird. Picture after picture reappeared in my mind. Here I sat, struggling with a decision that only had one answer. If Paul ever turned up, I'd divorce him. I was done making excuses for him. Mama creased her brow, eyes dancing between the two of us. What pictures? Do you know what she's on about, Charlotte? I spoke matter-of-factly. Annie sent me pictures, graphic pictures, of Paul. They'd been sleeping together, like we suspected, and she wanted me to see them. Mama's eyes grew wide as her mouth dropped open. Cora slid by the table, garbage bag in tow, and out back through the conservatory. Mama lowered her voice. Like nude photographs or something? Before I could answer Mama,